Thanks for choosing GoldSeek.com Radio as a trusted business and investing news source.
Bob Hoy, he's an editor-in-chief investment strategist, and he's now at BobHoy.com with...
Oh, it's Katie. Formerly, Patricia ran the show.
Right, and you also have...
Oh, yeah, we've got Ross Clark, who is a superb technical analysis. As a matter of fact, they're one of the fairly well-known market letter guys who is also a technician. He refers to Ross as the Mozart of stock technician.
That's quite high praise.
And then we've had Leventi, who is our fixed income guy, but he made a huge amount of money in a marijuana stock, so he's out traveling around the world now, no longer writing.
Your timing's been impeccable. I mean, five chief analysts last week call for new record highs in the yellow metal. What's going on here?
As you get higher in the price, the recommendations get more resolute. And then some long-known names are saying, load up now, you know, back the truck up, that sort of stuff. But with us, we figured that, well, actually going back to last year, we were looking for the possible discovery of credit problems in the fall, which we got. So then the idea was to avoid gold stocks and that there would be an opportunity, in the fall to buy them. And the actual low for gold or the stock indexes was, what was it, late September on that really dreadful sell-off, which Ross got with the technicals as being extremely oversold. But then I mainly focus on the stocks. So it was, you know, let's just wait and on the side and see what happens. And so, but for November 1st, enough had fallen into place where we said, okay, buy some gold stocks on weakness. It declined for 2 weeks. And actually, it was a very nice entry point. And then you've got a good rally. And so it is now the technical excesses are being reached. And when we get that, we say, yeah, let's take some money off the table in the gold stocks as well as in gold. Now, gold has done it. The move hasn't been solely on the dollar going down. As a matter of fact, the dollar hasn't gone down. But it's what is happening here, Chris, and this is where we rely on the historical research. And you always do it in terms of the senior currency, which is dollar now, and prior to that, it was the British pound. So what you get, and I did the original work on this, is that in each great financial bubble, the first one was 1720, and 1929 was number five, and 2018 was number six. So, but on each of them, back up a bit. During that period, this long history, there were times, long times, when the senior currency was convertible into gold. That meant there was no change in the price relative to the sterling. But then when you take gold's price and deflate it by the CPI, then it starts to tell you a story. And that was that on each of the great financial bubbles, the real price of gold went down. But Chris, I want to tell you, any bear market you're in is always the worst in history. So anyways, then one then looks for the bubble to get exhausted, which it has been doing. And one would expect that gold's real price, as deflated by the CPI, would begin to form a base, which it has been doing. And on a monthly basis, it's trying to turn up, which is constructive. Now, the reason why this is important is that the real price of gold is a proxy for the cost of mining it. And there have been times, like in 1995, when I think it was then, when the street discovered that while the price of gold in U.S. dollars was going up, the cost of mining were going up faster. So the mining, the stuff wasn't so good for profitability. So then this is where you get back to the real price. And when the real price is going down, it reflects that you're not getting a good enough price for your bullion production relative to your costs. And that was the case in 1929, where Homestake was the premier producer. And for that year, it reported a slight loss because the cost of everything else was up with the 1929 boom. And Homestake stock had underperformed, and then it got hit hard with the crash. But for 1930 and 31 in there, you could have accumulated shares in Homestake at $9, around that level. And then with 1929 setting the low for the real price, it started to turn up. So Homestake's earnings started to improve, so that by the time you got to the end of 1932, which was before Roosevelt started fooling around with the price, Homestake stock was up around 130%, and the earnings were up about 100% in that order, and the price of gold was still at $20.67 an ounce. And then, of course, when in 1933 Roosevelt started fooling around with the gold price, and the reason for moving gold up, depreciating the dollar, was that he had a professor of agriculture in his brain trust, and he had the theory that if you move gold up, that would raise grain prices. But that's not the case, because after a bubble, everything falls relative. So it was, and then he got bored with it at $35 an ounce. But it really did have the real price of gold going up, and the whole thing became a party. And Homestake stock went up to about $65 a share from, in 1931, a $9 purchase. But, Chris, there was more to it than that, because in those days, gold miners paid virtually everything out by way of dividend. So in 1934, 35, 36, they were paying out $4 a share dividend on a $9 purchase. I mean, people in the gold business were making a huge amount of money. And then also where you can show that earning profitability increases for a gold miner, but that rise in the real price also enhances valuation of exploration properties. So then the juniors were flying as well. So it is incredible, but you've had some of your best bull markets for gold stocks in the post-bubble deflations. But the problem with the gold commentators, many of them, is that they learned their trade in the 1970s when the game was inflation. But the public really runs the show, and the pattern has been for 300 years that you have a great boom in commodities, like 1920, and then it crashes, and then the action shifts over to stocks and bonds, the financial assets. So that in 1920s, the bubble was building. The action had turned to stocks and bonds. But the Federal Reserve then was absolutely riveted by concerns about weak pricing power, because the 1921 crash in global commodities was staggering. So then the Fed was easy in monetary policy because they were hoping to keep prices up, not understanding the nature of a financial mania. And so the extra credit they were pushing into the system then went into bidding up stock prices. And then, of course, it's the disaster follows when the stock bubble completes. So here we are again for most of the last decade, and the Fed has been easy, and the way they phrased it this time around was that they had to keep the CPI inflation above 2%. I mean, we heard that for most of the last decade. So they were deliberately easy and not understanding the nature of a financial bubble. And here we are. It's blown out and is in kind of rolling over. Actually, Chris, there's some details within this that I could go into if you like.
Continue if you'd like to, or if you'd prefer to switch over, you know, to the latest rate cut cycle, we can do that. I'll leave it up to you.
And this, again, I discovered in the 1970s, is that you have the big commodity boom, like I said, 1920. Then the stock bubble blew out 9 years later in 1929. So then I went backwards. And then also I knew about that in the 1720 South Sea bubble, that the commodity boom had completed in 1711. So you had the 9 years. So I went looking for bubbles in between and found them. You had one in 1873, where the commodity boom had peaked in 1864. So you got this nine. But the key to current markets is that in 2008 was a huge speculation in commodities led by crude oil, which went up to 147. And then you had the hard hit, and crude sold off all the way down to $26. But that then was the equivalent of 1920. So 9 years later, you'd kind of see if a mania in the stock market was blowing out. So, yes, we had the huge speculation going into December 2017 with the Bitcoin bubble, and then the New York Stock Exchange Composite Index set its high in January 2018. So then for 1920, I was able to get a commodity index plotted by month. So then you can go from the peak in commodities to the month to the peak in stocks. So in 1929, that ran for 9 years and 5 months. And this time, if you take the peak in commodities in 2008 and the high for the New York Stock Exchange Composite in January 18, that was 9 years and 7 months. And also, there was we were looking at the world stock market index without the U.S. in it, and it set its big high in January 18. Now, also on the high in the NASDAQ, that momentum thing, the RSI got up to 89, which is very high for such a broad index. But in the height of the dot-com bubble in 2000, the NASDAQ, which was crazy at that time, the RSI got to 84. So January 18 was the culminate, a fabulous climax to a decade of speculation. So now what we're looking for is that NYSE comp did not make new highs, and the World Stock Index did not make new highs. So the rollover here will be very important. And what we have on this one is that with the dismal December, as we called it, we're looking for rebounds out to into the second quarter, and that would be in base metals and crude oil, and the credit markets would turn positive. And so what we called it was sunshine in the markets perhaps until mid-year. And then the next step was that probably that it would turn to twilight in August, which it has done with that whack to the market. And then the last one on that was that in the fall, another credit crisis could be discovered, and we called that the twilight zone. The key industrial commodities did rally, and they have sold off, so that's no longer positive. The yield curve went recently to inverted. That trend has been positive, but getting inverted, it becomes a warning. And when it reverses to steepening, then that'll be a bad thing. But the other part of the good things likely to run to mid-year would have been credit spreads, which is the difference between high-grade bonds and low-grade bonds. And in a party, everybody's confident, so the spread's narrow. And that would, again, run into the second quarter, which it did. But the one we use is the CCC spread relative to treasuries. And in June, it made a reversal such that we called it the first breakout on setting a reversal to a widening spread. But the key one has always been the second breakout, and that occurred two, three weeks ago when, of course, we got the hit in the stock market. So that then is working out. So, and the credit spreads since the second breakout have continued to widen, which is a warning. And the yield curve hasn't reversed yet. Now, that may happen in September. And when you get both those aspects of the credit markets going against you, the stock market is hopeless. So, but there's an exquisite irony in here, Chris, is that for us last year at this time, and we wrote it, that what was missing in the equation was that there wasn't enough nervousness in the financial markets for the street to be calling for a Fed cut. It just wasn't there. I kept looking for it. And so this is what we based our conclusion on, that the sell-off would likely be 20% on the senior indexes, which is what it was. But on this one, beginning in July, was the... There was enough concerns that then they started bringing out the story about the Fed cut would boost the stock market. Now, there's the aspect of this one with the Fed cut is, and I'm just completing the study now, is that the Treasury bill rate, which is a market rate of interest, and it's set continuously all the time, is changing all the time. Well, the three-month bill rate went up until March and then turned down, and then in May was down distinctively. So then the Fed had no choice but to follow. And there are a number of senior analysts out there who couldn't figure out why the Fed was cutting the rate when the unemployment numbers were so good and the stock market was so good. And we just wrote quite simply, the Fed had to cut the rate because the T-bill rate came down, so it cut the rate in order to look in charge. But in 1929, the T-bill rate went up until that May, and then that was confirming that the boom was on. And then when it turned down, that was suggesting the boom was off, and the Fed didn't cut its interest rate until that October. So there was 5 months spread between the market rates of interest turning down and the Fed following. So I've traced this back to the 1873 bubble, and indeed in previous examples of a bubble climaxing, the senior central bank, then it was the Bank of England, was around six months behind the market. So then what this suggests is that those people who study the Fed and consider it running the show, it's completely futile because the Fed is consistently behind the market. So the decline in the T-bill rate is suggesting the contraction, but the Fed had to follow. So all of the sheep then bid up the stock market because of the Fed cuts, and that was the case in September of 2007. And I have a wonderful quote. I haven't got it in front of me, but it was the chief investment officer at Harris Partners, and he was saying that the Fed cut was certainty and it would drive the stock market up. Well, that's the celebration you get with the first Fed cut, and then continuous cuts after are associated with a bear market. And indeed, the interest rate cuts are the fastest in the worst part of the bear market. So how people can stay with this theory that the Fed cut can keep a party going has never been proven in history. So here we are. So all of the items, or let's say that most of the items you would monitor, are in position that are saying that a financial contraction is quite likely this fall. So how do we back this one up with history? Well, all of these great financial bubbles I've mentioned since 1720, all of them crashed in the fall, every one of them. And then, of course, many ordinary bull and bear markets have found that, hey, if there's going to be a hit, it's likely to be in the fall. And that's the old saying, sell in May and go away. And it's just the way financial markets work. As a matter of fact, that takes us back to 1720. But in northern Italy, in the Florence, which their wealth was then, there was not a stock market as such, but investors put their money into mortgages. And there's an excellent book. I'll just step back. And then there was a mighty crash in 1345 and 46, where adversity came along, and then the administrators then allowed mortgages to be transferable so you could sell them, and there was a crash. And there was an Italian scholar, his last name Cipolla, did a wonderful book on it, so it is detailed. And guess what? The most severest panics in that mortgage market occurred in the fall. So it's a human nature thing. So I think that people should be, we've been saying it, build liquidity, sell the rallies, and including gold stocks now, and then you've got some cushion, and there will be opportunities late in the fall. And we will have the technical analysis to help us get in, which we had last year in, let's call it, dismal December. Yeah, it was December 26th when we had a sequential buy on crude oil and on the S&P on the same day. And, you know, it's been joy ever since, so. And we've now been getting upside exhaustions and sequential sells on a number of equity items out there. So, again, reinforcing it to build some liquidity while the bids are around.
You see some pretty rough seas ahead. How does that bode, though, for the yellow metal and silver?
A critical question is, in a bull market for gold and silver, silver will always outperform. But then silver does a great service, because when it starts to underperform with the gold-silver ratio going up, that then is also a warning on the financial markets. And in so, say, in September sometime, if there's a day when silver is down very sharply and gold is not down, then that can signal impending disaster. So in the contraction or in the booms, the gold-silver ratio goes down, and in the bust, the gold-silver ratio goes up. So we're looking for it to, maybe 110. It's in the 90s, 80s, 90s over the last while. So Chris, from time to time, I've called it the metallic credit spread, the gold-silver ratio. So silver, I think, it's been a game or an item that, for some reason or other, fundamental analysts who do supply-demand take to. And, of course, I think every year since I've been in the market, since 1963, there's been a shortage of silver in the markets, and yet silver does what it does. And the key item on now is that the U.S. dollar is not going to crash. Although the Fed is printing them like crazy, the extra credit went into bidding up stocks and bonds, and that's where the crash will be. So in previous post-bubble contractions, the senior currency, hitherto sterling but now the dollar, becomes chronically strong against most other currencies and most commodities, and as I like to show in for most of the time. And so this is what we're looking for now. But one of the things that you can get as the bubble ends is that the careful money goes to liquidity. It doesn't care what kind of return it gets. It just wants to be protected. And your most liquid items are U.S. Treasury bills, shorter than 1 year, and gold. So there will be a bid for gold. As a matter of fact, we expected for this year that the investment demand for gold would increase, and mainly because it's careful money going to a liquid item. And then also we expected the T-bill rate to decrease because there'd be a bid for treasury bills, and this has been the case. But then that also puts in a bid for the dollar. So to call for a strong gold rally based upon a very weak dollar, we can't do that now. As a matter of fact, the gold rally this year has been outstanding, considering there's been very little change in the dollar index. But then, hey, there's been times in history when you had a strong market for copper with very little change in the dollar. So this is then the street beginning to put the real price of gold up. It's not broken out yet relative to the CPI, but it has a little, Chris, but it's not something I'd get excited about. I think that'll come in the fall. So one has to change one's point of view depending upon market circumstances. And the gold community has learned that gold will go to 10,000 and the dollar is going to go to zero. But this has been dismantled over the last decade by the fact that we've had a party in financial assets. So, but then the irony is that when this party crashes, and it will, that then sets up a post-bubble deflationary bull market for gold that'll be fabulous. So, gosh, you just want to take a look at that chart for Homestake in the 1930s. Incredible. And then also the other one, Dome Gold or Dome Mines, that was a discovery item then, and it was a huge return from that one. And then there were many other juniors, which have all disappeared or whatever, but I was at a brokerage office in 1972, and there was one of the outstanding stock promoters in Canada was giving a pitch on whatever it was then. I can't remember what it was, but and he had a warm-up man ahead of him. And this was a very dapper guy, charcoal gray suit, double-breasted, and he was much older. And so I said, after the pitch, I said to him, "Now, were you in the broker's business in the 1930s? And he said, "Yeah, in Montreal." And in those days, the Montreal Stock Exchange was pretty hot. So I said, "I know that the senior gold stocks did very well in the 1930s, but what about the juniors?" As I said, "There's no evidence." And he said, looks at me, and he says, "Sonny, in 1933, I was a broker. We had a lot of hot deals. And one of my bigger accounts gave me a brand new Ford Roadster as a gratuity." So there's an old one from the gold mining business. And a broker gets a new Ford Roadster as a tip. You can go to cash, but with the T-bill rate declining down to zero, hey, and rolling over and getting less. So there is a place where you can park some money and make some money out of it, and that would be 3 to 4 year good grade corporate bonds. You get a higher coupon, and it won't kill you. You won't get downgraded, and you won't get hit with price fluctuations, because there will be some swings, but that's one thing that'll make some money. And if there's any Canadians listening, from Canada, if you buy 3 to 4 year U.S. government bonds or U.S. Corporates, you're going to get the bang out of the dollar. The Canadian dollar will go down relative to the U.S. So that's a fairly safe thing to do. And the trouble is, you got to be with a broker or sleuth out and find some 3 to 4 year corporates for you. It'll take a bit of work. I should look up and see if there's anybody's got some ETFs on that, or kind of a little unit trust or something. I'll take a look, but who knows?
There's virtually an ETF for everything you can think of today. Speaking of, we found an interesting ETF on the platinum sector as well, which has been, you know, if you think about it, of all the precious metals, there's only been one that's lagged here. Palladium's head off to the sky. Silver's had a big run. Gold has had its day. But platinum continues to lag. And I think that could be one of the next big stories, the catch up between platinum and palladium, especially, you know, as the engineers find unique ways to substitute palladium with platinum within the catalytic converter industry. Bob Hoy, any other parting comments for folks today? The services you provide?
BobHoy.com, and we publish, at least I do regularly, about a 4-page piece each week, which covers all the aspects of the market, and then we've got our technical work, which comes out on opportunities. You know, hey, oh, here's a buy, or oops, here's a sell kind of thing. So that comes out, as I say, on opportunities.
All right, Bob Hoy, we can't thank you enough.
Okay, we'll look forward to talking to you next time.
The blockchain revolution is transforming the global arena, disrupting every industry in its path. GoldSeek.com is excited to introduce an off-the-chain opportunity in digital gold and silver from our friends at Atmex and Sprott.com. One Gold holds physical gold and silver metals at the Royal Canadian Mint, the first online marketplace to offer secure and convenient buying, selling, and redemption of digital precious metals. One Gold uses Vault Chain, a secure, immutable blockchain ledger developed by Tradewind Markets, the leading innovator in digital precious metals, distributed ledger, and blockchain technology. Vault Chain. Gold and silver are 100% redeemable through One Gold for physical precious metals delivered to customers' doors in any size at competitive prices and low transaction storage costs. As a special offer and for a limited time only, One Gold is offering gold and silver at spot price with no additional premiums. OneGold.com is secure and accessible 24/7 on any device, offering convenient purchases and sales of precious metals. Easy recurring transactions make passive saving and gold dollar cost averaging as
easy as a single mouse click.
Vault Chain
offers the best tier pricing on AppMex products, setting the industry standard as a fully backed physical asset with easy redemption in coins, rounds, or bars, offering clients peace of mind and full transparency. Don't get left behind. Remember to bookmark OneGold.com for the safest and most convenient digital precious metals today. Remember, OneGold.
GoldSeek employees may or may not own shares. Nothing contained herein should be construed as investment advice.
Shopping for fine jewelry just got easier. GoldSeek.com has identified the most successful jewelry brand to launch in recent times. Many Jewelry is rewriting the way consumers buy fine jewelry. Integrity Craftsmanship, the only company to sell 24-karat gold and platinum jewelry, avoiding confusing alloys and gems, a true precious metals investment. Many Jewelry's disruptive business model embraces Franco-American craftsmanship and direct-to-consumer economics, rapidly disrupting the $20 billion monopoly, just like Amazon and Uber. The sky is the limit with $1 billion of jewelry purchases daily for loved ones and those special occasions. Many Jewelry is an innovator positioned to capture market share, with annual sales growth in the industry topping $30 billion by 2021. Many Jewelry coined the term investment jewelry, pricing by the gram, transparently disclosing its profit margins, a truer investment in pure gold or platinum. Similar to real estate, even artwork, Many Jewelry has a weighted value easily calculated, ensuring value wealth as a long-term investment. With sales in 60 countries around the globe, 20,000 orders already, don't miss out on the explosive growth potential. Many Jewelry trades under the symbols MENE on the Toronto Exchange and in the US, MENEF. Remember to sign up to Many's Shareholder Club to receive shareholder news, updates, and special discount codes for jewelry purchases. Remember, Many Jewelry.
GoldSeek employees may or may not own shares. Nothing contained herein should be construed as investment advice.